Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in at...
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. Listen up. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you on Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on the good old West Coast. And today we're going to enter into the authors and experts with another dynamic author, and his name is T.L. Baguette. He is a criminal defense attorney. He's turned writer. Located in Oakland, California, most of his practice involves defending accused murderers. His outlook on the criminal justice system, need for reform, the unbalanced jury selection process, and his fight for those receiving harsher sentences than they deserve is what fuels his writing. Baguette's writing is inspired by his time in the courtroom where he has tried over 20 murder cases. His skill in delivering closing arguments and presenting the stories of his clients to the jury make him a master storyteller. Good Lookin' is his debut novel and weaves his expertise from the courtroom into the page of a thrilling mystery. He holds degrees from the University of the Pacific and Georgetown Law School and serves annually on faculty of the Stanford Law School Trial Advocacy Clinic. So let's get started and let's say hello to our very special guest, T.L. Baguette. Hi, T.L. How are you today?
Great, Rose. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, we're very thrilled to have you on our show because everyone is interested in the law and justice, and especially the criminal justice system. I'd say the family law holds a candle to that. And so it says here that you have been a lawyer in over 20 murder cases. Is that your specialty, murders?
You know, I practice in Oakland, and so I suppose it has become my specialty just because there's so darn many of them in Oakland, California. So, you know, I represent, honestly, people from all walks of life who are accused of committing all sorts of different crimes. But I represent a fair number of people who were charged with murder for sure.
Exactly. And have you ever had a client that you felt was innocent and shouldn't be prosecuted? And how does a lawyer overcome that feeling if they feel he's innocent and yet he gets prosecuted?
Right. Well, those are certainly makes for a very stressful case, right? When you have a pretty good idea that your client is guilty, there's, you know, obviously pressure to do well and give him the best defense. But, when you have an innocent client, that's when the blood pressure rises and it's quite stressful. Luckily, at least in Alameda County, where I predominantly practice, the district attorney's office does a good job of listening. And I think I've been around long enough and have earned their trust. Such that if I tell them, hey, this isn't someone who's accused of murder, that, you know, it's not just a tough case for the prosecution. I actually believe that he's innocent. When I tell them that, they have an open mind and for the most part, you know, have no trouble looking at the case and even dismissing the charges if they think it's warranted.
Yes, and racial injustices today is a huge issue all over the country, and It's been an issue for a very long time, but it's really been ignored. And so I read that you're also interested in making it fair and addressing racial injustices in the jury selection as well.
Right. I mean, until very recently, most of the counties in California took their prospective veneers or prospective jurors from voter registration polls. And although, you know, recently African Americans and other racial minorities have been registering to vote in record numbers, it hasn't always been the case. As you know, many of them are disenfranchised and, you know, don't have a politician that they count as their own or they think can be trusted. And so they don't register to vote. Consequently, when a lot of my clients sort of look behind them in the gallery in the courtroom, they are amazed at the lack of people of color in the jury pools. You know, and that's obviously not to say that every African American or person of color is going to be the ideal jury for the defense, far from it. But it just makes, I think, everyone feel a lot better about the process when everyone has a hand in deciding the fate of these young men and deciding justice and participating in the system.
Yes, because when there's a prejudice or a biased judge or jury, the cards are stacked against that person. And so it's a very important issue for all lawyers and judges to work on and to address in their workshops, in my opinion, and in their schooling. And, I mean, it's not a secret that some people have gone to prison for years and ended up either dying in prison and found out they were innocent or ended up spending most of their life in prison and then found out they were innocent, which is a horrible thing to happen to anybody. So thank God for due process of law in this country. And so what caused you to write your book, Good Looking?
I've always loved to write creatively, but the law... there's plenty of writing that gets to be done when you're a lawyer, but creative writing is frowned upon, right? Because after all, the law is the law. And so when I finally just, you know, stopped procrastinating and sat down and started to write creatively, it was such a breath of fresh air. The law promotes this very, you know, turgid, boring type of writing style, right? Where you have to cite case law for just about every sentence you write. And it's probably the least creative writing you can possibly do. So I guess I started writing more just as an outlet than anything else. As far as the subject matter, you know, write what you know, right? I have a huge backlog of fantastic stories from my trials that I can weave into the writing. And hopefully that makes for some entertaining reading.
And so tell us about your main character.
Well, the main character is named Joe Turner. Like me, he's a criminal defense attorney. Joe gets stressed out when he has cases like we talked about where the defendant is innocent, or at least he believes they're innocent. He probably drinks a little bit too much when that happens. He's somewhat of a smart ass, again, probably a little bit like me. And so there's quite a bit of me, actually, in the protagonist. What's nice, though, is obviously when I write, I have plenty of time, right? I have plenty of time to think about the perfect line, right, the perfect quip, the perfect argument, the most eloquent, you know, persuasive argument I can make to the jury. So it's more accurate probably to say that Joe Turner would be is like me, except sort of a lot better and more eloquent in his job, and funnier and wittier and better in every respect.
Well, you just achieved your fantasy of yourself then. But
exactly.
I disagree with you. I think you're a very prominent lawyer from reading about all your hard work that you do to make justice work for everybody, and I do want to commend you on that. Did anyone ever tell you look a little bit like Senator Ted Cruz?
Only about 3 or 4 times a week. Yes, I get that quite a bit.
See.
Yep.
That's not a bad
All
thing. He's a nice-looking man, too.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks. No, I've certainly been called worse than a Ted Cruz lookalike, for sure.
Well, you know, there's a quote from Matt, I guess it's stated, Miyako, M-A-I-O-C-C-O,
uh-huh.
The author of Letters
yep.
to 87. He says, praise for good-looking Todd Biquette, known as a skilled and meticulous criminal defense attorney, fashions those same attributes as a writer with his engaging breakthrough novel, Good Lookin'. Biquette's alter ego, Joe Turner, expertly untangles what initially looks like an open-shut case, guiding us through a series of mysteries along the way that keeps us in suspense, even as the verdict is read. So in other words, I want our audience to know this is a page turner, and you won't stop reading. You'll just keep turning the page until you get to the end. And that's very exciting. Did you want to tell us any incident in the book that stands out in your mind that you'd like to share?
Sure. So thank you, by the way, for those compliments and for reading that. You know, it's interesting how when I write, I end up taking bits and pieces from when I develop a character from actual people that I've run across. And there's one district attorney that Joe Turner goes up against in the book, who was very prominent in my mind when I was sort of writing about him and developing his character. This is a trial that I was involved in several years ago. But this attorney, at the podium, he had this habit of wrapping his pen on the lectern every time he made a point, sort of like, isn't it true, sir, that, you know, and by the end of the trial, I wanted to just, you know, leap over the counsel table and tackle this guy. And so that's an example of character that made its way into Good Lookin', a Joe Turner mystery. And if the district attorney ever reads the book, I have no doubt that he'll recognize himself in the book.
That's great. And so it's a highly entertaining, crisply written and enjoyable book. Good Lookin' takes you on a journey through the trials and tribulations of criminal defense attorney Joe Turner as he and his young client, accused of murder, navigate their way through the criminal justice system. And that was a wonderful comment by Kevin R. Murphy, judge of the Alameda County. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
You're so welcome.
Yeah, the check's in the mail, Judge Murphy.
The white envelope.
Just kidding.
Well, I would definitely like to hear more about your cases and your opinions and how you think the justice system is doing overall in the entire country on another interview, because you are well versed in these areas that concern many, many of us. And your book is in paperback or hard copy and Kindle, is it?
That's right. It's available. Paperback and Kindle versions are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or Kobo, wherever you like to buy books online. Or you can order it through your favorite neighborhood bookstore as well.
That's fantastic. And do you have a website?
I do. It's tlbequette.com. That's spelled T-L-B as in boy, E-Q-U-E-T-T-E .com. So feel free to visit the website and get to know me a little bit better, or you can purchase the book there as well.
And also, the cover is intriguing as well. How did you come up with the cover of your book?
Yeah, so the cover, there's a sort of a mirror image of a pair of twins. That is a side plot in the book that sort of merges with the main plot, and it chronicles these two twins who have a hard life growing up in Oakland. I'm the father of twin boys myself, and so I think I had a little bit of insight into what makes them tick. My own twins would disagree with that. They think I'm as clueless as ever, of course. but anyway, they figure prominently in the book, and I chose that to be part of the book cover.
That's fantastic. And because I really like the cover, it's very, you want to pick it up and see what is this book about, and that's so important, the cover of the book. And so I know you weaved your storytelling skills into the courtroom, and you weaved it into defending murder suspects, et cetera. And in real life, did you choose to represent people who were accused of murder, or did that come in a later time in your career? Was that your initial thing that you wanted to do?
Not necessarily. I mean, I wanted to do trials, right? I wanted to get in front of a jury and I suppose be the center of attention. And I liked the drama and the spontaneity of a trial. I knew I wanted to do that after law school rather than push papers around a desk. The attorneys that get the most trial experience by far practice criminal law. And, you know, initially I didn't much care whether I was a prosecutor or a defense attorney. My path led me to defense, and I have to say it's been rewarding. You know, the first time that you, especially representing indigents who, if I'm paid by the county to represent them, lots of times those people have never been, they've never had anyone say, "I work for you." And so when I can actually help them in some cases, it's a pretty rewarding experience. The murder cases, you have to be fairly experienced to handle those cases. And eventually after, you know, I don't know, 50 or 60 trials, I did my first murder case. And there's certainly... it's stressful, like I talked about before, but it's also, you know, quite exciting and very rewarding.
So all of these experiences you have are inside this wonderful book and looking good. And it's something that people need to read, I believe, because... even though it's a fictional novel, people need to read more about cases and stories that someone like yourself, who actually care about people, regardless of their economic status or the color of their skin, deserve to have their book read. And your book is a page-turner, and it's exciting to know that someone like yourself, attorney T.L. Bequette and author, have written this wonderful book, Good Looking. And I recommend it to all of our audience, and I thank you so much for being on Columbo Chronicles today. Is there any
thank
message
you, so
you want to leave with our audience today?
Well, I'll just leave you with, I hope you like the book. I mean, you've given it certainly a lot of compliments, and I hope it lives up to that. I think it will. So get out there and purchase A Good Lookin', A Joe Turner Mystery. And I welcome your comments afterwards. You can go on my website and leave a comment. And, I welcome the feedback on the book as well. And thank you for yours.
Oh, you're so welcome. And thank you for being our dynamic guest today on Columbo Chronicles Live. And you're looking good, T.L. the Cat. God bless you.
Thank you. Thanks, Rose.
You're welcome. Thank you. And T.L. the Cat has left the building. And be sure to get his book. And his name is spelled T period L period B like boy EQUETTE. You can look him up online. You can look up his website. You can buy his books on Amazon. And this is really exciting because this is a lawyer who actually cares about people and doesn't matter about their race or their color of their skin or their economic status. He's out for justice for all people, and that is really refreshing, is it not, America? And again, it's Good Lookin', T.L. the Cat. Check it out and get a copy. You'll find that it is a page-turner. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and I will be back in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe in Benson, Arizona. And I want to wish all of our veterans blessings, and I hope they had a wonderful, wonderful Memorial weekend. There were boat parades going on. There was all sorts of services and events going on around the country. And we really do love our veterans. And we do honor them and respect them and all that have our heroes who have gone before us. And we appreciate all they did and sacrificed for freedom. Freedom, liberty, and rights. So important to maintaining our wonderful nation's constitutional freedoms, liberties, and rights, and due process of law. I just finished speaking with T.L. the Cat. He's a prominent lawyer out of Oakland, and he is turned writer, author of a fictional novel called Looking Good. Be sure to pick up a copy at his website or at Amazon.com, because he discusses some really important issues. I'm hoping he'll come back and discuss specific issues, such as racial injustices and jury selection. Very, very important that you have a balanced jury system. Not that if all people appear to be one color that they aren't going to be fair and uphold the law, but it makes people who are being tried feel a little more protected if there's a combination of persons in the jury pool. And also I'd like to ask questions about why sentences are handed out to mostly people of color in a stiffer sentence than those who don't have a stiff sentence but are giving a golden pass. For example, when the director of the FBI, former director of the FBI, James Comey gave his longtime friend and associate, Hillary Clinton, the golden pass on the email scandal. To me, that was a very serious federal allegation against her, and yet she got the golden pass. So why are some people given the golden pass and others persecuted to fill the beds in the jail cells, which jails and prisons, which I wrote about, are warehouses. They're warehouses. They warehouse people. They warehouse foods. They warehouse supplies that the prisoners must purchase. And if they don't have family or friends to send them money from the outside, I'm not sure how they to purchase some of those products that are necessities of life, such as toothpaste and toothbrushes and so forth. Maybe some prisons supply them, but there are prisons that do not. There are different classes of prisons. There are country club prisons for the wealthy, and they get a TV, they get to exercise, they get a gym, they get to have their family over for barbecues on Sunday, no matter what they did. So, and then, of course, there are the maximum prisons where it's alleged that the guards fell asleep during the Jeffrey Epstein sentencing in a maximum prison in New York, and he was able to change his will before he allegedly committed suicide. And it's very strange because in maximum prisons, they have cameras all over the place, and they have a main camera room where they can see all over the prisons. And he was a high-risk maximum security prisoner and a very wealthy maximum security prisoner who they didn't want to prosecute for, 30 or 40 years and ignored while he was trafficking children from around the world for wealthy people involved. And so these are the questions that are bothering people today, where they see people who have billions of dollars or millions of dollars being able to appear to buy their way out of the justice system. And in my book, Fight Back Legal Abuse, Chapter 10 reads, Justice for Some, with the dollar sign S-U-M, and Justice for Some, S-O-M-E. Because to most people who grew up during my era, we believed that justice was equal and justice was for all people, but and that all judges were outstanding and upheld the law and were objective and honest and fair and just, and that all lawyers protected their clients. And that was an illusion. That was an illusion that we were taught as children and grew up with that illusion, because that is our hope, and because the justice system is all we have to protect we the people from tyranny and from being charged with crimes we didn't commit and being accused based on allegations only and without any evidence. Circumstantial evidence, people have gone to jail or prison and many were innocent. Some have died in prison cells and then found out they were innocent later, or they spent years of their youth in prison only to find out they were innocent as well, because there is a wonderful, wonderful organization called the Innocent Project. The Innocent Project reviews cases, but they're limited because they only have so many lawyers and to help people and so much funding. And so they help people who they believe were wrongfully sentenced to prison. And they have found a myriad of cases over the years, an overwhelming number of cases where they found that the person accused and sentenced to a prison cell were innocent, and they actually got them released. Some people get compensation, some people do not from the government. And so your life is totally taken away from you, your freedom, your liberty, your rights, when people are wrongfully accused of a crime. And even if you're accused of a crime and you're innocent, you have to prove you're not guilty of that crime. Even if you're 100% innocent, even if you're 100% telling the truth, people are afraid of the system, and rightfully so, because there aren't too many lawyers like T.L. Beckett who actually will stand up and fight for people who he believes are innocent. And that's why I'm very thrilled that he wrote the book Good Looking and made it a page-turner so more people will read the story and the novel, the fictional novel, become interested in how the system works for some and doesn't work for everyone. Because many times it's how much justice can you afford? For example, we have seen General Flynn accused of a crime. He lost his home. He lost all his savings. Money was gone. And his life and reputation were basically destroyed for a while. And it was outed on mainstream media. But most people didn't believe General Flynn was guilty. And fortunately, he was found to be an honorable general who didn't deserve being accused of that crime. And then we saw Roger Stone, a senior citizen who didn't commit murder, but he was treated worse than a murderer, worse than a serial murderer. And his home, he lost his home and his savings. And what I'm trying to tell you is that based on an accusation, you can be made homeless just trying to defend yourself, mortgaging your home, using up your savings, using up your retirement until you have nothing left, losing your business. Because once you're in litigation and it's serious, you're in court all the time. And they can continue the case into ad infinitum. And every time they continue the case, you have to pay your lawyer if you have a lawyer. And once you run out of money, you may not have a lawyer. You may have to learn how to represent yourself in court, is the bottom line. You may have to hit the law books. You may have to type up your own legal doc to find your own evidence. But I suggest, don't give legal advice, as an advocate for justice, long time, I suggest that you do gather your own evidence. Personally, I do not believe personally, in a personal opinion here, not legal advice, handing over a hard copy, especially if you only have one copy, of an important document to a lawyer, but holding on to that and giving him a carbon copy, a Xerox copy of that document, and let him subpoena another certified original copy or the along with the witnesses who may need to bring it to court. Because if that copy gets lost, that copy gets lost by the lawyer, it isn't in the file, you're sunk. You may not have enough money, $2,500, to get a copy of that letter, of that document back again, that hard copy, certified copy. You have to start asking questions. and more questions before you hire a lawyer. You have to find out, you know, what is their, check them out, check out their reputation, check out what their specialty is. How many cases have they actually won? Are there any complaints against the lawyer? Now, one complaint is not going to really tarnish a lawyer's reputation because maybe it was not something that was intentional. So you have to weigh the, when it comes to complaints, you have to weigh what was the complaint about and why was it even prosecuted or was it taken seriously or not, because anyone can file a complaint. So that isn't always a negative. But you do should ask around and ask people. You should ask people, do you know of a good lawyer in family law? Do you know a good lawyer in criminal law? Do you know a good lawyer who's handled bankruptcies? And then go out and interview three lawyers. You don't have to hire the first lawyer. Interview three lawyers. And then use your human vibes along with the information you gather on them and your referral from a friend and make your decision. You don't need to hire the very first lawyer because most people, when they get sued or get into some sort of trouble, panic. They're in shock and fear takes over and they're scared. And you rightfully need to be scared of the system. And that's rightfully scared of the system. Who is going to go against a bad judge? Who is going to, which lawyer is going to risk a reputation to object to a judge's decision or ask a judge to be removed from a case or ask a judge to to overturn his decision? Those are far and few and in between. And it can be done, but finding the right lawyer to help you is extremely important. And as far as the pills go, in my opinion, not legal advice, most appeals, in my opinion and research, do not get overturned. Judges do not like to overturn another judge's decision. And appeals cost tens of thousands of dollars. So people should start putting aside money for a legal defense fund for their own family instead of having to mortgage their home. Because this is a very litigious nation. We have probably one lawyer for every three or four people in the country. We have more lawyers than probably any other profession that's a white-collar profession in the USA than any other country. We have more prisoners in America, more Americans in prison than any other nation in the world, including Russia and China. Think about that. Why are there more Americans in prison in America? Why did Vice President Cheney and President George W. Bush think that it was important to use our tax dollars secretly to build more private prisons in America? Why? If prisons are about rehabilitation, why do we need more prisons and more private prisons for profit? More private juvenile facilities for profit? Whenever the judicial system intertwines itself with the private corporations on Wall Street, it opens the floodgates to injustices, to more corruption, and more white envelopes being passed around. the three branches of government should remain the three branches of government, but they aren't, and they are holding themselves above the law. They commit insider trading, and they don't get prosecuted, but Martha Stewart does. And they make millions and millions of dollars. They refuse to retire. They work from, they remain in office for 25 to 50 years now, or until they drop dead. They can work until they're 100 in Congress and other positions like the U.S. Supreme Court. And even if they've got cancer and are very ill and can't get to work or not of sound mind, there's nothing you can do about it. They do not have to retire. So why are all these loopholes in our laws that are not in the best interest of the American people, especially when it comes to the judicial system and the United States Supreme Court, SCOTUS? Why are they given lifetime positions when we know that if there are liberals in office like the Obama-Biden administration, they're going to appoint liberal federal judges and U.S. Supreme Court justices? If there is a conservative in office, they're going to appoint conservatives. If there's an opening. But why is it that they have lifetime positions? Why is anyone guaranteed a lifetime position? No matter what you do, they can't be removed. That should never happen in America under any circumstance. Everyone should have term limits. Otherwise, it opens another gate and another door to and another window to making deals behind closed doors. And so we have a Congress who not only has engaged in insider trading, but they are invested in their portfolios with Wall Street. They are funded by billionaires like Bill Gates and George Soros. And George Soros funded nearly the entire Democrat Party. Governors, mayors, AGs, DAs. And why has the government allowed that to happen? Everyone knows that George Soros is anti-American, that George Soros stated that he seeks to devalue the U.S. dollar and to make communist China the number one superpower economically and militarily in the world. We know that Bill Gates is buying up everything on the stock market, including our farms across America, that he's invested in 500,000 shares in Monsanto, that he's invested over $10 billion in major pharmaceutical companies, and that he intends to earn $200 billion off of jabbing everyone in the world with experimental and trial chemicals with a new technology, doctors allege, or gene therapy, and allege they can alter your God-given DNA. And he also funds and supports through Microsoft and Gates Foundation, CDC, WHO, and Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is a depopulation program. He supports him and his dad, and his friend Jeffrey Epstein. We're all support eugenics, depopulation programs, euthanasia for elderly people, so that they can spend, he said, millions more on education, hiring school teachers. These are depopulation programs. And yet we have this gap between the federal government with their big foot trampling on everybody who is not part of that system and telling us they are denying us our constitutional rights, civil rights, human rights to work, to be educated, to breathe through our nose and our mouth, which is healthy, to the brain, to the organs, to the cells, to the immune system, instead of cutting off our oxygen supply and breathing in carbon monoxide, because Bill Gates wants to reduce the carbon monoxide down to zero along with the population by 2050. So Americans need to really study the judicial system and how we can tie up these loopholes where there's justice for some, S-U-M with the dollar sign, and justice for some, S-O-M-E. Remember, the Constitution says that everyone, all Americans, are guaranteed to seek justice equally. It doesn't say all Americans are guaranteed they will be treated equally, and that word "treated" is what is left out of the judicial system. And one of the last things I want to say is the most important thing we can do is protect and preserve due process of law. We are the only country in the world who has due process of law, meaning you are innocent until proven guilty, but we are allowing the government to accuse us of crimes like being a domestic terrorist or a domestic enemy, even if we're 100% innocent, because we don't go along with liberal agendas. And so due process of law, innocent until proven guilty, is the most important thing we must protect along with petition, because the Constitution guarantees due process of law to every American. Otherwise, without justice, we have nothing. We have nothing without justice. The judicial system is the most important body of all. They are the ones that can allow corruption to continue or be engaged in and allow politicians to hold themselves above the law, or they can provide justice for all and treat all people equally in the courtrooms. So on that note, I have to go. God bless you. God bless America. Hey, remember, injustices can happen to you, and they can happen to me. But together, we can make a positive difference. Remember, you're never alone when you tune in to Columbo Chronicles Live.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.